From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, biogerm warfare and dead microbiologists. I wonder why, with Bob Cohen, Eric Nadler, Dead Silence. By the way, welcome new affiliates to Coast family, WFPA-AM in Fort Payne, Alabama, and KCPX-AM in Moab, Utah. We're standing now at 525 strong. Thanks for joining us. Consumers are being urged to immediately stop wearing a certain type of fabric-filled robe made by Blair due to a fire hazard that is believed to have killed now at least six people. The Consumer Product Safety Commission in Blair, based in Warren, Pennsylvania, said they were issuing the second recall notice in 2 months after receiving reports of six deaths due to the robes catching on fire. Now, in five of the six cases, the victims were women who were cooking at the time, and three of the victims were in their 80s. The recall is applying to 162,000 robes. The robes were made in Pakistan. The Senate struck a historic blow against smoking in America, voting overwhelmingly to give regulators new power to limit nicotine in the cigarettes that apparently kill nearly a half a million people a year, to drastically curtail ads that glorify tobacco, and to ban flavored products aimed at spreading the habit to young people. President Barack Obama, who has spoken of his own struggle to quit smoking, said he was eager to sign the legislation, and the House planned to vote for Friday. Cigarette foes said the measure would not only cut deaths, but reduce the $100 billion in annual health care costs linked to tobacco. Swine flu is now formally a pandemic, a declaration by the United Nations health officials that will speed vaccine production and spur government spending to combat the first global flu epidemic in 41 years. There have only been 29,000 cases worldwide, but they say it's in 74 countries, and they call it a pandemic. This is a strange story. More than 2 million households are in danger of seeing their major broadcast TV channels simply disappear into a fuzz of static when analog service ends on Friday. That is nearly half the number that were unready a few months ago, when most analog TV broadcasts were originally scheduled to be turned off. The shutdown was delayed for 4 months at the request of the Obama administration. The CIA believes that Osama bin Laden is still in Pakistan, and the spy agency is hoping to close in on him as that country's military cracks down on the northwestern tribal area where he is thought to be hiding. CIA Director Leon Panetta told reporters after a speech on Capitol Hill that finding bin Laden remains one of the CIA's top priorities. Iranians have begun voting in a key presidential election, pitting hardliner Mahmoud Ahmadinejad against a pro-reform challenger more open to improving ties with the U.S. State media has announced early Friday that more than 45,000 polling stations across the country had opened. Voter turnout there is expected to be high during the 10 hours of voting. The election is seen as a referendum on Ahmadinejad. His top opponent, Mir Hossein Mousavi, has energized many youth who want fewer hardline Islamic restrictions and better international relations. There are about 46 million eligible voters in Iran, a country of 70 million people. Two other candidates are also running. Hussein Hejazi has worked in the media and been invited to take part in many radio shows, including Coast to Coast. He's an active member of the Iranian community, and here he is right now with his intake on this situation. Hossein, welcome back to Coast to Coast.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on your beautiful show, Mr. Nouri.
Tell me about the reaction and your guess on what you think could happen on this Iranian election.
Well, first of all, this is the first time that we have been witnessing such a commotion and such a turnout of the people in the scene of this election. First of all, the number of people who are participating and what we have been witnessing in last couple of weeks, young people mostly are trying to come and do something against Mr. Ahmadinejad, who has been really, in their view, has made a big damage to the Iranian people and that country altogether. And we have been witnessing again for the first time ever in the history of Iran this type of election and the debate that has been face-to-face debate between the candidates, in which they mostly made personal attacks toward each other and questioned their opponents' honesty and integrity, and have been accusing each other of corruption. And what they have been accusing Mr. Ahmadinejad of is ruining the image of Iran and Iranian people, who are peaceful people, with those comments that he has made against Israel and the Holocaust, and also the money that he has wasted during the highest prosperity of the Iranian oil income, when the oil price was on the highest level, and has wasted all that money with helping rogue countries and the people who have been deserved to use that money for the production in the country and development of the country has been wasted. And the money that Mr. Ahmadinejad has dispersed between the, his supporters, and all those issues are something that this turnout have been very, very amazing to all the people who have been witnessing the situation in Iran in last 30 years that this revolution has happened.
Hussein, do they take polls in Iran like they do here in this country?
They actually do, and I heard of a poll that a group of Iranian here who are in touch with Iran via internet, they have talked to 10,000 people. They have taken this poll from 10,000 people, and the result has been toward the victory of Mr. Mousavi.
Interesting. Now, okay, if Mousavi is elected, will he still be able to overcome the mullahs who are running Iran, the Ayatollahs there?
Definitely not, because although the position of the president is a very strong, very powerful position, but the mullahs, especially the supreme leader, has the last word.
Would this person, though, be able to convince the mullahs, we need to open up dialogue with the West, we need peace, we need to admit that Israel has a right to exist, we need to admit that the Holocaust occurred, and we need to move forward into this world like everyone else? Would he be able to convince them to do that?
Well, Mr. Nouri, we have to make a distinction between the mullahs also, because we have very, very understanding mullahs and the hardliner mullahs. And right now with the situation, if Mr. Mousavi wins the election, there's a possibility that, like the time that Mr. Khatami came to power, he can soften the position of those hardliner mullahs toward the West and toward the other countries, and open the door in a way that this situation ends in a way.
How do we know that this election will be done honestly? I mean, we've even had trouble here in this country. How do we know in Iran that this is going to be a fair election out there?
There is no way that we can be sure of that. But we hear that, for example, Mr. Rafsanjani, who is one of the most strongest mullahs in Iran, has given mission to the, but these are like rumors that we are hearing from Iran, to several thousand young people to go and check the to control all the polling stations and make sure that everything is going right. And this is what is causing a lot of concern between the people who are watching this situation, meaning that either of these candidates be elected, we may deal with the commotion and a unrest in Iran, because both of these candidates have their own supporters who, these supporters have some authorities who are backing them. And this is the concern of the people who are watching this election very closely.
One last question, Hussein.
Yes, sir.
If Ahmadinejad gets reelected,
yes,
do you expect Israel to use some kind of military armed conflict?
Well, this is a big question, and I believe that Israel is not going to take such a risk with what we have been witnessing and hearing from many of the people, many of the authorities in Israel itself, because they don't want to create a situation that the whole Islamic world goes against Israel, and especially with the situation position that Mr. Obama has chosen to deal with the Islamic countries, especially with Iran. I doubt that this is going to happen ever.
All right, this will be a dramatic election. Hussein, thank you so much, and it's very possible that by the time we go off the air on our Friday night into Saturday morning show, we may have results of this Iranian presidential election. There should be no assumed link between onboard speed sensors and the crash of Air France Flight 447 into the Atlantic Ocean last week, according to the airline's chief executive. He says he's not convinced that the sensors are the cause of the accident. Still, the airline is continuing a program begun just 2 days after the crash to replace sensors on the Airbus A330s. Terrorism has not been ruled out. And now I am firmly convinced that when it's your time, it's your time. An Italian woman who arrived late for the Air France plane flight that crashed into the Atlantic last week has been killed in a car accident. Johanna Gantheiler had been on holiday in Brazil with her husband and missed the Air France flight 447 after turning up late at Rio de Janeiro's airport on May 31st. She died when her car veered across a road in Austria and swerved into an oncoming truck. NASA managers have given a unanimous go to Saturday's launch of the space shuttle Endeavour. The mission managers cleared Endeavour for its flight to the International Space Station. The weather outlook, they say, is as good as it gets. The price of oil bursting through $71 a barrel today amid revelations and proven reserves had fallen for the first time in 10 years. Now there's predictions that the price could eventually hit $250 a barrel. You'd be talking about $10 a gallon for gasoline? Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And more than 120 shoes have gone missing from homes and gardens in Germany after a fox developed a bizarre fetish. The mystery was only solved when a forestry worker found a stash of the missing footwear in the fox's lair. Tiny tooth marks on the leather shows that the fox grabbed those shoes. They've now dubbed the fox Imelda Marcos, after the shoe-mad president's wife from the Philippines. They think that the fox may have used them as toys for her cubs to play with. You know, for decades, scores of doctors, government officials, journalists, and others have pushed the benefits of psychiatric medicines for children. In a moment, we're going to be talking about Generation RX on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're going live now to our affiliate in Cleveland, Ohio, WTAM. Writer and filmmaker Kevin Miller is there. He learned at a very young age that he was blessed with the ability to write and tell powerful stories. Kevin began pursuing journalism as an editor of his high school newspaper, and in the 1990s, focusing on production of documentaries about the great social issues of our time. And he's got one now with Generation RX. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing wonderfully, George. Thank you for having me.
Oh, the amazing broadcast lines. You sound like you're right next door to me.
I wish I were.
Well, it's good to talk with you. Tell me a little bit about why you decided to do a documentary on this, Generation RX.
Well, the first film that I did in the genre of health, I guess, was called Let Truth Be the Bias, and it was narrated by James Earl Jones. And while I was researching for that film, which was used, I guess, before the passage of DSHE, the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act, I came across some footage in the FDA archives that no one had ever seen before. And it was footage of about 40 or 50, I believe, Americans standing before their government. The year was 1991, and they were testifying before the Food and Drug Administration about the dangers of Prozac. And the things I saw and heard, George, were just completely awful. Everything that you can imagine, from my father killed my mother to my sister hung herself to all the way down the line, the worst of the worst. And so it made quite an impression on me. And I wasn't able to use it in the film Let Truth Be the Bias, but I knew at some point that I would get to it. And around 3 or 4 years ago, there was another hearing before the Food and Drug Administration about what are called SSRIs, or antidepressant drugs. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
like Prozac, right?
Exactly. Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, this class of drugs. And it dawned on me at the time that, you know, I've heard the exact same words spoken before, and it clicked that I had heard it 15, 16 years prior at the 1991 hearings. So I knew that it was time, that nothing was changing, and that I had to document this for the American people to see.
You look at what you call a pattern of collusion between drug manufacturers and, of course, regulatory watchdogs such as the FDA. Now, I know for a fact, for example, that, you know, a lot of attorneys, for example, from the FDA end up working in big business, in big pharma, and vice versa. Some of those attorneys end up going to the FDA. There's a massive conflict of interest. What did you find with Generation RX's really investigation?
Well, you really know your background, because ironically, in the film itself, there's a section where I feature a former second-in-command at the Food and Drug Administration. His name was Michael R. Taylor. And the interview that I conducted with Mr. Taylor was in 1994. And so, again, 3 years after that original videotape where people were testifying about the suicide and violent acts happening because of these SSRI drugs. And so I was quizzing him about this because the FDA had forced L-tryptophan off the market. And L-tryptophan is an amino acid, of course, and it was a competitor of Prozac. And it was forced off the market literally 3 months or so after Prozac became available.
Yeah, they claimed that there was something wrong with the strain that they got from Japan or something like that.
That's exactly right. 38 people died, and they blamed it on the L-tryptophan. But what it was it was a contaminant from a facility in Japan called Showadenka, which had numerous problems that FDA had documented prior to this, which, by the way, also raised the question whether or not the FDA intentionally did this to remove this competitor of Prozac's off the marketplace. But, you know, when you mention this revolving door between the Food and Drug Administration and you know, lawyers and for big business, I mean, Michael R. Taylor himself has used that revolving door unbelievably recently. And he goes back and forth between Monsanto. And, for example, Michael Taylor, when he was with Monsanto, one of his charges was to get RBGH growth hormones placed in milk. And he did so.
He sure did.
At the FDA and then at the Department of Agriculture.
And by the way, Monsanto has since sold that division. I guess they decided they didn't want anything to do with it after a while.
Well, it got a lot of bad publicity, didn't it? Yeah. And it was called Pozilac, I believe the trademark name was. But nonetheless, George, as you well know, I mean, there were 90 days of hearings over RBGH growth hormone alone before it was passed into law. It was done very quietly in 1994. And, you know, in the meantime, our kids are sucking down millions of barrels of milk tainted with this awful contaminant.
Kevin, I want to talk with you when we come back in just a moment about how some of these drugs get to marketplace. I want you to explain that process for us, because in some cases, they get approved by the FDA, and then 6 months later, a year later, all of a sudden, they're yanked off the market again because some people die. I can't understand why that doesn't show up in tests, or if it does, maybe they're hiding that on us. We'll also open up the phone lines. We'll give you an opportunity to talk with Kevin Miller, who's just done an incredible job with his work, Generation RX. And he's got a couple websites linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com, including his main one, kevinmiller.com, but also he's got a website devoted to Generation RX as well. So we'll be back in a moment. We'll continue talking with him about his documentary, and we'll open up the phone lines. You have a question for him, we'll take it next on Coast to Coast AM. Microbiologists have been dying mysteriously for a number of years. We're going to talk about that in Biogerm Warfare, Dead Silence. That's next hour on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, we'll continue talking with the producer and director, Kevin Miller of Generation RX, and we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Kevin, how do these drugs get approved and then get yanked off the shelves again? How does this happen?
Well, George, it used to be just a complete money game. It's changed over the years since I started really tracking this in, let's say, 1992 or 93. They used to say, the drug companies used to say, well, to bring a new drug to market, it takes $300 million or $250 million. Now, of course, they say it takes $750 million. But in the case of, we were discussing Michael R. Taylor, the second in command at the FDA, a little while back. And, you know, in the case of Prozac, for example, George, there were 1,600 suicides in Prozac during the trials alone. Jeez. and 28,000 adverse events reported. So that's during a 16-month trial. And so when I was questioning Michael Taylor in the film, I'm asking him that very question. How can you approve this drug that has 28,000 adverse events reported and 1,600 suicides, but yet you pull the safest amino acid on the market, L-tryptophan, off of the market? And, you know, it is a real game, and it comes to this collusion that you're referring to before. We have people in positions of that our taxpayers supported at the FDA, like Thomas Loughran, who helped the FDA, who helped Lilly cover up the side effects of Prozac. And we're not talking about, you know, just a few years ago, George. This dates back, we show in the film, we have letters that we post in the film, dates back to 1986 or so, where they were very aware of the suicidal side effects of Prozac and these SSRI antidepressant drugs, and they consistently covered it up. As a matter of fact, Thomas Loughran, who is in charge of all of the psychopharmacy at the FDA, wrote a letter to the head of Lilly and said to Lilly, you know, the firm has a friend in Bob Temple, who was one of his cohorts at the FDA who was dealing with Eli Lilly at the time.
Yeah, we have a friend. I love that. Yeah. And remember the aspartame situation, how that got passed through. I mean, that was a fiasco.
Donald Rumsfeld's favorite drug.
Absolutely. And they brought in someone to head the FDA who was on the side of aspartame, and it was a mess. Let's take a few calls here while we chat, Kevin, and then later on tell us where Generation X is available. John, first-time caller driving around in L.A. Drive carefully. John, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, hi. I guess
hi, John.
My question... Hi. I guess my question to you is, have you, you know, really looked at the number of people that these drugs have helped? And in these particular situations, are you kind of maybe just looking at the worst of the worst? May these people have committed suicide or done these, you know, unfortunate acts to themselves while not being on these drugs? And being a person that takes SSRIs myself, I can definitely see the difference being on them, being off them. I can tell you, my family members can see the same also. So I'm not pro-medicine. Hey, I wish I didn't have to. But I can tell you, it definitely does help.
So it works for some, Kevin. Your reaction?
Well, that's a great question. But the reason why Generation RX focused the way it did, George, and is because the media has been telling us for the last 20, 25 years how great these drugs are. What they haven't told us is the rest of the story.
Yeah.
And in order to make an informed choice, we need all of the information, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we are putting children on these things. And, you know, good Lord, it's one thing for an adult to make a decision, as this gentleman has, to do an SSRI drug. That's fine.
I mean, here's
he's an adult.
Danny Gans dies from a painkiller. He takes a pill, he goes to sleep, and he never wakes up.
And there's so many of these stories. I mean, the entire a film, George, wall to wall, could have been about tragedy. But to go further to the point is that this gentleman's making is not only do we need the rest of the story, but, you know, one of the things that the gentleman should be aware of is that while it may be helping him, and thank the Lord that it is helping him, at any point he could have very violent thoughts or reaction.
Or reaction.
And that's the thing that everyone needs to be aware of, because if you're not aware of that, then it just catches you off guard, and before you know it, unfortunately, there's a tragedy.
Next up, let's go to west of the Rockies in Washington state of Kevin. You're on with Kevin. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yes. Hey, I was calling about a pill called guanfacine. I believe that's what it's called. My son takes it. He's 7 years old, and it's to help with Tourette's, but he's got ADHD, and just kind of wondering what, you know, if there's any effects that I'm could be worried about in the future.
You're concerned about. Do you know about this drug, Kevin?
I really don't. I'm wondering if it's a stimulant drug. It doesn't sound like it. It's only an ADHD drug. Mainly the ADHD drugs are stimulant drugs. What I would say, however, is that when children are diagnosed with ADHD and sometimes Tourette's as well, but especially with ADHD, one of the things that became very apparent in the research, and when you talk to a lot of parents and researchers and science writers, as I did, is that, for example, a six-year-old child might go on Ritalin, and they'll be on the drug for a period of, you know, maybe a couple of years. And then the drug will be less effective as time goes on, so they up the dose. Well, then after they up the dose, after a certain period of time, the child might have a psychotic reaction, George. So when the child has a psychotic reaction, they take him to the doctor or to the psychiatrist, and the doctor doesn't say, that child, we gave him too high of a dose of that stimulant drug. This is a known side effect of the stimulant drugs. No, they really don't say that. What they say is, oh, this child is bipolar. So now they cross over into this very dark territory of being prescribed antipsychotic drugs for bipolar disorder for the rest of their lives. And this is really the tragedy of it all. Why? It started with a child squirming in their seat, and you give the child a stimulant drug, and then you graduate, quote unquote, to a bipolar drug and these awful, powerful antipsychotic meds. That's the danger. And that's why people need to be fully informed.
Vancouver, Canada, we go. Tim, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Hi, Tim. I want to applaud you both for your work, man.
Thank you.
So anyways, as a victim of one of these bad pharmaceutical drugs, how do you go about exposing a very overt and loose attempt at covering up evidence in a lawsuit?
Well, boy, we sure did it in the film. I don't know if you've seen the film or not, Tim, but Generation RX is full of these kinds of stories, and it's full of proof, if you will. And one of the things that I try to tell people is, you know, especially parents, use my film as a weapon to fight back, because you can trust the facts that are in the film. You know, integrity is the currency that independent filmmakers live or die by, and I take it very seriously. So, you know, when I'm talking about FDA officials, especially people like this Dr. Thomas Loughran, who I mentioned earlier, who clearly colluded with FDA as well as two of his two of his cohorts at FDA. I mean, those are criminal acts. And you don't help them with their marketing. You don't help them in, how are we going to attack the negative PR we're starting to get about Prozac now? That is not the government's job. And so, you know, these lawsuits, interestingly enough, are problematic because they build these lawsuits, Lilly and the rest of the drug companies, build these lawsuits into their marketing budgets, George,
Yes. Just
like the car companies do. So if there's a car company crash and they knew they had a faulty gas tank, that was already built into the budget. So they pick them off one at a time, and they plan for those lawsuits. Interestingly enough, George, because you're a man of solutions, I'd like to offer forth one. There's something called the Sarbanes-Oxley Act.
What is
which
that?
Was it was brought about in the wake of the Enron scandals and the early corporate scandals in the beginning of the Bush administration. So they passed the Sarbanes-Oxley Act as the means Congress had the means to address this. And basically what it says is that if you are aware of or if you are colluding or if you are covering up instances of harm that you were aware of prior to a drug passing or even after a drug was already on the market, that it's a crime. So whoever knowingly alters or destroys or mutilates or conceals or falsifies data, et cetera, it could possibly go to jail for a minimum term of 20 years. Now, this is something that we've never had at our disposal before in dealing with these awful cases of abuse by drug companies and FDA and other governmental bodies, because it's very hard to factor a 20-year prison sentence into a marketing budget, isn't it?
It sure is. But we need somebody to be prosecuted. We need examples, right?
I agree with you.
Let's go to Kingston, New York. Karen, you're up with us. Hello, Karen.
Hi. Thanks, George, for bringing people like Kevin on like this.
Sure thing. Kevin came to us by Robin Falcove, by the way. Dr. Robin recommended Kevin, and here
she's
he is.
She's a wonderful doctor, wonderful friend, too.
Okay, go ahead, Karen.
Well, first, the thing that I first thought when you started speaking, Kevin, is, I'm sure you've been asked this before, but, you know, it really, I wonder how you feel safe, exposing all of this, but how do you feel safe? I mean, because you're filming things and it would look obvious if somebody came after you and you had an accident or,
it's really a legitimate question and concern, Kevin.
It is, and it's one that I asked when I did my first Health Freedom film. I asked of a doctor named Julian Whitaker in Orange County, California, because he was very visible, had a newsletter called Health and Healing that went to 750,000 people a month, and he was doing very visible things to confront the pharmaceutical companies and FDA, et cetera. And, what he told me was a great lesson. He said, well, I try to stay very visible. And so here I am, praise the Lord, on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. So I'm very visible. And so I don't worry about that. You know, I really believe that I was put here to do this work. And as I said, integrity is very important. And the work is not full of conjecture. And, just to tell the truth makes a difference. And, when we talked before about Prozac and we talked about the film that I saw, George, in 1991 and 18 years later, I was working on Generation RX. There was another really simple case that really impacted the lives of everyday Americans and human beings everywhere with a benign substance called folic acid, vitamin B12, right? In 1980, I believe it was, or 1981, Dr. Jonathan Wright, another holistic doctor, came out and said, hey, if women of childbearing age take 400 micrograms of folic acid, they will be able to prevent neural tube birth defects or spina bifida. Well, the FDA hemmed and hawed, and they wouldn't tell people to take this vitamin. And this went on and on and on through the hearings in the 90s. And in 1996, they finally said, you're right, spina bifida can be prevented if women of childbearing age will take 400 micrograms of folic acid. So what happened during that 16-year period, George? I tabulated it one time. A minimum of 30,000 birth defects could have been prevented if the FDA would have just gone out and told women to take a vitamin that would have cost one penny. 30,000 birth defects. Now, that's the kind of stuff that outrages me. This is why I do this work, and this is why I believe in informed choice.
What was the drug, Kevin, that had women giving birth to children that had, like, little seal flippers for arms? Was that thalidomide?
Thalidomide. Sure. Yeah. It was in the 50s, yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, another blunder out there. I mean,
there's dozens of them. I mean, honestly, George, we could do this work 24 hours a day for the next year, and we wouldn't uncover half of it.
Let's go to Debbie in Dallas. You're up with us. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
I'm so glad I got through in memory of my father because Prozac killed him. He was admitted to the hospital for depression, and he, when I went to see him, he was so sedated. Prozac was the only drug he was on, they told me. And so he just, he was so sedated, he died of respiratory failure.
I'm sorry.
And I just wanted to get that in memory of him.
Well, let's dedicate this whole show, this hour, to him. How about that, Debbie?
That's fantastic.
We'll do that.
And you know, I mean, there are people in my film, George, tells stories like Debbie's, a very courageous woman, Matthew Milling Downing, whose beautiful 11-year-old daughter hanged herself in their garage 1 hour after watching Animal Planet on TV with her father.
Oh, my God. Let's go to Las Vegas. Bill, you're up with us. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi. Good guest, by the way.
He is. He's super.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But I just have a quick question. We talk about how, you know, depression after taking these pills, it builds up to, you know, these thoughts of suicide, these violent thoughts. But I was just curious about the science behind that. What actually causes a person in their brain after taking these pills to feel that suicide is an appealing thought to them more than it was before?
Well, that I'm not sure I can speak that specifically to it. But what I can say is that in the film, for example, there's a wonderful science journalist who appears prominently, and his name is Robert Whitaker. And Robert Whitaker was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize for his science reporting, and he's quite an amazing man. And he was a big proponent of these drugs and of screening for depression and the rest of it. And what he started advertising this, if you will, through the Boston Globe and other newspapers that he was writing for at the time. And when he actually peeled back the layers and started looking at the science is when he realized that it didn't stack up. That it didn't hold up. The evidence was false. And he kept digging deeper and deeper. Well, maybe I made a mistake and whatnot. But what he told me and what it says in the film is that it changes the brain chemistry.
And it magnifies the tendencies of depression. I mean, people who normally would be somewhat melancholy, they get very depressed instead of the drug helping them. And it doesn't happen in all cases. But when it does... It's bad, Kevin.
No, you're exactly right, George. And you get to the point where you also can be just completely cold and almost outside of your body. Again, the reason that an 11-year-old girl or so many people can commit suicide. And do you ever stop to think it's really a tragedy, but how many people think of hanging themselves as a way to kill themselves? I mean, you know, good Lord, aren't there quicker ways or more efficient ways to do it than going through the whole process of stringing something up and going through that awful, you know, what?
You know what, just even the whole thought, Kevin, I mean, all of us, we're human beings. We're going to have ups and downs in our lives. We're going to have tragedies in our lives. But, you know, to end it as a cop-out, as a way to escape is just unbelievable. Kevin, where do we get Generation RX?
Well, you can certainly get it on our website, which is GenerationRxFilm.com, GenerationRxFilm.com. It's also available on Amazon.com and a number of other outlets as well. But it's readily available.
I'd like to use you as a resource for anything else that we do in the future. Is that all right?
Oh, it'd be wonderful. I've really enjoyed it. I'm honored to be with you, and you do such cutting-edge work, George. Thank you so much for what you do on a daily basis.
Thanks to the folks, by the way, Kevin, out there at WTAM for hooking this up with our engineer, Dan. You sound wonderful. I mean, there's nothing like broadcast lines, huh? When they work, they are good. It's Kevin Miller, producer-director of this film and in a number of other documentaries that he has done in his career. But this specific one we're talking about is Generation RX. Now, when we come back, you're going to hear some things that are pretty darn startling. You think it started this hour? There's more to come with Dead Silence as we talk about biogerm warfare and also these strange cases of dead microbiologists. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.